speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Friday, July the 19th, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. Today we're going to take a look at how language is being used. We've gone from deplorable to demons. That is what is happening right now. As a matter of fact, we had the Democrats call on the Jesuit chaplain of the Congress to exorcise the chamber there. Actually, they didn't call on him. It was his decision. He felt like it needed an exorcism. I agree with him. I don't think that it worked, however. We're going to take a look at that and look at how they have stepped up the rhetoric here. And again, President Trump is the one who is supposed to denounce his supporters in North Carolina. Send her back. Send her back. How hateful and racist, we're told. And this is people like Mitt Romney, people like Mitch McConnell, most of the GOP establishment. They are furious with Trump and the GOP base. And yet, I'll just remind all these people of the press conference that the Quad Squad held the other day. Maybe that's a polite way to. I prefer the term the Sisterhood of Traveling Burkas. But we'll be polite. We'll call them, just for the AP style sheet, how about this? The Quad Squad. A squad of four who think that they know better than the rest of us, and they don't really care much about this country. They would like to make America into Somalia or Palestine or wherever it is that they have loyalty to. But as they were headed to their press release, the press conference to criticize President Trump, remember, we had the Rebel Media Reporter, and we're going to remind you of that today. We're going to play that again for you so you can hear 40 seconds of him asking them questions. Is there anything about this violent attack by this guy who wrote his manifesto, said, I am Antifa, right? They were the ones who incited this violence by all of their over-the-top rhetoric about so-called concentration camps. And even the Associated Press went down there and said, it looks more like a summer camp than a concentration camp. We're catering to these people here. But they would not disavow anything about what they had said, about how they had incited this violence, this terrorist attack. They were completely silent. Completely silent. The press doesn't have a problem with that. Mitt Romney doesn't have a problem with that. Mitch McConnell doesn't have a problem with that. These Republicans don't have a problem with that. Fox News doesn't have a problem with that. I've got an editorial here from one of the Fox News reporters, Howard Kurtz. He doesn't have a problem. He's got a problem with Republicans. He's got a problem with President Trump, not with the Quad Squad who incited a terrorist attack and real violence. But of course, President Trump, as he always does, do you disavow these people? Yes, I disavow this. I disavow my own supporters. And then that's not enough. He's still called a racist. And so we're going to talk about how the AP style sheet is being used to control debate. It doesn't matter whether it is charges of racism, whether it is how we talk about open borders, illegal immigrants. Oh, you're not allowed to use that. I'm sorry. Illegal. I have to check myself. No, actually, I don't check myself. We don't check ourselves here against the AP style sheet. Not here at InfoWars. That's why they took us out. We don't kowtow to their speech rules, because if you follow their speech rules, they rule your speech. They rule you, quite frankly. And I've got a great clip that somebody sent to me on Twitter showing discussion of exactly what this is about. Going back to 1969, it was all predicted. All predicted. This is going right down the Orwellian checklist. And the people who are putting this out there are AP, specifically. They're the ones that are giving cover to CNN, labeling everything as racist. So we're going to take a look at the speech rules and who rules your speech and who rules you. We'll be right back.
Deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Friday, July 19th, year of our Lord 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. We're going to take a look at what's going on in the back and forth of rhetoric. Why did President Trump kowtow to these people, disavowing his supporters, when these people will not disavow their responsibility in inciting a violent terrorist attack against an ICE facility? Everywhere. They're concentration camps. They're killing kids. They're Nazis and so forth, right? And so this guy says, I am Antifa. In his manifesto, he violently attacks this facility. He's killed in the process. They would not respond whatsoever, as they were asked on their way to criticize President Trump. And now you've got the Republicans criticizing not the Quad Squad. No. They're criticizing President Trump because his supporters said, send her back. So let's revisit this. Let's see who makes these rules. You know, when we talk about even things like the American dream, right? This article from National Review, 38% of Democrats, this is a new Gallup poll, 38% of Democrats say the American dream is unattainable for them. Because, you know, only dreamers can have dreams, right? Dreamers, the only dreamers we have, according to, 40% of the Democrats, the dreamers are the people who are coming here from other countries, not the people who are born here. They don't have any dreams. And quite frankly, if you are a Democrat supporter and you support all of these policies, you can flush your American dream right down the drain because that's what these policies are going to do. Republicans are not that negative on this. 11% of Republicans only think that the American dream is not dead. They're more optimistic because they actually think something's going to be done about the border. I'm not in those 11%, quite frankly. I'm very pessimistic that anything is going to be done about the border. I mean, you go back and you look at these. Remember when we started talking about how it was mysterious during the Obama administration, how all of these Walmarts were being shut down? What are they going to do with these? Well, now we see they've turned them into summer camps for people who are trans Americans. They identify as Americans, therefore they am. Right? I think I'm American, therefore I am American, and I have a dream that I'm going to realize here in America, because you're going to give me free health care. You're going to give me a free education. You're going to put me at the front of the line when it comes to health care, when it comes to credentials, when it comes to jobs. I get put at the front of the line when I come here, right? Take a look at how the Republican Party, for example, is still betraying American workers. When it comes to foreign workers, they're on board with this plan that I talked about, Kamala Harris. 100,000 immigrants from India, college graduates to take your job. So you may go to college. You're not going to get in-state tuition to any school that you want to go to in the United States. But an illegal alien can. Somebody who is a foreign citizen, criminally trespassing the United States, can get in-state tuition any state that they want to go to. And yet, the Americans, if they can go to college, saddle themselves up with debt. Of course, you know, they're not going to be given any preference at many of the schools because, you know, they're just not the right demographic. So get at the back. You're just an American. You're a white American. You're a white male American. Forget about it. You're not going to school here. And then if you get a college degree somewhere else, they're going to bring in people who got a college degree in another country. Because they'll work more cheaply. Kamala Harris is working with the big business Republicans, and the GOP is working with the big business Republicans and the Koch brothers who keep telling us we want to have open borders. We want to have open free trade. And you know what's going on with that, right? You've seen the open free trade stuff, the giant sucking sound, as Ross Perot said. And it's been sucking the life out of this economy for decades. And President Trump is doing something about that. He's not doing something about the massive immigration of cheap workers, including college-trained workers to take your jobs. This is not even bringing people in to take unskilled jobs. Disney has done that. Disney did that and said, you're going to train these people bringing in from India, or you're not even going to get severance pay. Your job is gone. I'm replacing you with cheap labor from India. You're not going to even get severance pay if you don't train your replacements, your cheaper replacements from India. And is the American dream dead? It is if the Democrats win. I don't even know that you're going to get it back with the Republicans because, again, the Republicans aren't doing anything about the border. As I said about this Walmart situation, this has been in the works for a long time. All of the so-called concentration camps, this all started under Obama. The Walmarts that have been repurposed as summer camps for new arrivals, this all began under Obama. Republicans don't have a problem with this. Nobody's got a problem with this. President Trump talked about doing something about this. I think he would do something about it if he understood how he is being gaslighted by the Department of Justice and this army of lawyers on what he can and cannot do. He doesn't understand how judicial supremacy is not in the Constitution. It is a co-equal branch. And we're going to have today, we're going to have our guest is going to be Richard Proctor. And we're going to talk about judicial usurpation, judicial supremacy, how they have subverted the Constitution. Because if you don't understand that question, nothing is going to happen. You can have somebody like President Trump who wants to protect the borders, who wants to build a wall, who wants to use the military to protect the border, he wants to restrict people coming in from foreign countries that we're at war with, and that's not a Muslim ban, as one judge said. Venezuela and North Korea were two of the seven countries. The other five were Muslim majority. There are 50 Muslim majority countries in the world. Only five of them were on that list, five countries that we're currently at war with are considered to be terrorist countries. So it was not a Muslim ban, but a judge says so, so it is. Whatever a judge, anywhere, any one of the 3,500 judges says something, the president bows down. And he's being gaslighted on all of this stuff. We go back to the American dream. What is the American dream? Well, part of it, you know, is not just the expression of it was a home. And, of course, you're going to be paying a lot more in taxes to educate every child in the world who wants to come here and be educated at your expense. We don't have any control over how many come here. And so still, 70% of Americans feel the American dream could still be grasped. Overall, 29% disagree. But with the Republicans and Democrats, 38% of Democrats say, no, there's no American dream. And I think they're right. If we don't solve this block, this judicial block that is happening, they're the ones that I actually agree with. GOP is rattled by the Trump rally, the headlines from The Hill. And this is how they portray this on The Hill. Thousands chanted, send her back. About the Somali refugee, Ilhan Omar. No, she's a Somali Marxist. She's a Somali anti-capitalist. She is a Somali anti-American who fled here for refuge. And that tells us how awful this country is. She flees from a country that where you have warlords killing everybody. Where women, because of their Muslim culture, have absolutely no rights. Where the per capita income is $187. How did she get here? That in and of itself is an interesting story. We've got a couple of reporters who have alleged some very interesting things about Ilhan Omar and her family. We're going to get into that as well. The fact that it appears that not only did she commit immigration fraud when she came in, she also then committed bigamy. Brought in somebody else committing immigration fraud there, committed tax fraud by claiming that he was her husband, then committed election fraud by using campaign funds to defend herself when the campaign charges came up. And then it gets even better. It appears that in this country where the per capita is only $187, that her father was allied with the Marxist rebels there. What a surprise. You know, kind of like Buttigieg. These people are second, third, fourth generation Marxists. They're hardcore. These people who are running the Democrat Party now. He comes here committing immigration fraud himself. Oh, we're going to get into all that. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. back. You know, the GOP is not too happy with Trump voters. They're starting to call you deplorable. I've thought the GOP establishment was deplorable for a very long time. Let's start with Mitt Romney, for example. Mitt Romney said that these chants in North Carolina were, quote, offensive, and that hurt his party's image. He said, I found the chanting and the chants to be offensive. Very unfortunate for my party, but also for our country. This is the guy who gave us Romney Care in Massachusetts with Ted Kennedy. This is the guy that was handpicked by the establishment as the hedge, just in case something happened and Barack Obama lost. They were going to get Obamacare or Romney Care. There's no difference between the two. No difference. You know that, right? You know that now, don't you? Didn't you know that when he was running in 2012, that it was a fix? It's just like what happened in the 1992 election with Ross Perot. He got into that because you had both Bush and Clinton were going to push through NAFTA. It was a given, Republican or Democrat, and he came in as a wild card. So they threatened him, threatened his family. He was ahead at one point, 39%. The other two were tied, 24% each. So they threatened his family. He pulled out. Then they ridiculed him as a crazy tycoon and did that for a couple months. Then he jumped back in, and he never recovered in the polls. But, yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. So here's the guy that betrayed us. He was there. He and Paul Ryan. And, of course, Paul Ryan did everything that he could to keep the borders open and also keep Obamacare going. And, you know, you just had the Cadillac insurance policy tax thrown out by the Democrat House. They threw that out. They just admitted that Obamacare is a sham. It is unworkable, that it has really destroyed our insurance. And yet, the other Democrats want to go even farther. They want to go ahead to Hillary Care, completely owned by the government, where they control everything. They call all the shots. They pay it. They're going to control all the shots. They will dictate what you can and cannot have, and they will tell you what you must have. You will get this treatment. Line up. We got a shot for you. You don't care whether you want this or not. You're going to get it. That's what's going to happen when the government takes over health care. But the House even admitted that Obamacare is a failure. Now, Joe Biden can't admit that. He can't even. He's still repeating the lies of Obama. You like your health care? You can keep your health care, your health insurance, right? He's still lying about that. But the others are pushing on to go full Hillary on health care. And then we have Mitch McConnell. Lower all this incendiary rhetoric. Everyone should do that. Okay, well, Mitch, you want to talk about incendiary rhetoric? Why don't you, Mitch McConnell, ask Nancy Pelosi to censure the Quad Squad, the Sisterhood of Traveling Burkas, who incited violence, Antifa violence, against that ICE facility. That was literally incendiary, firebombing. And they wouldn't say anything about that. But then, you know, because things are going back and forth on the House, you know, we've got other people there as well. We got Mark Walker, who is a House Republican vice chairman. They have so many different titles. I don't even know what a vice chairman does. I mean, we got speakers, we got whips, we got leaders, we got chairs, we got vice chairs. Everybody gets a title. Mark Walker, Republican, North Carolina. It's not right for Americans to talk to other Americans that way, period. I'm offended by send her back or send them back. They are American citizens. Okay, well, you people in North Carolina, he doesn't like you either. Here's a Republican in North Carolina, he doesn't like you. He thinks you're deplorable. You know, they may be American citizens, and they may be American congresswomen. Actually, Lindsey Graham called them congressmen. whatever they are. They hate America. They hate capitalism. They love Marxism. You understand that? I understand that. Do you? I'd like to send their ideas back to wherever they came from. Their ideas are foreign to America. Anyway, then you got Lindsey Graham jumping in. He says, all these congressmen won their election. They're American citizens. This is home as much as it is mine. Okay, Lindsey. And Lindsey supports the American system of individual liberty and free enterprise as much as these women do, quite frankly. Because you're not going to have any freedom. You're not going to have any money left if Lindsey Graham gets his way. And we have the military-industrial complex go wild. But it was so bad that the chaplain of Congress, who happens to be, as Leo Zagami points out, a Jesuit, this title, Jesuits called for an emergency session to exorcise the Democrats in Congress. Actually, I think they were demonizing anybody who wasn't one of the Democrats. The situation, says Leo Zagami, has become so intense in Congress that Vatican Jesuits had to intervene directly for an unprecedented exorcism. Reverend Patrick Conroy, an American lawyer and a Jesuit priest who is serving as the 60th chaplain of the U.S. House of Representatives, and another Jesuit, prayed to, quote, cast out all spirits of darkness on the House floor this morning, something that is extremely unusual. And it wasn't just Leo Zagami noting this. It was also headlines on the Hill this morning. House chaplain prays to cast out all spirits of darkness from this chamber. I don't know. The question is, did it work? Did anybody see, did Ilhan Omar's head turn around 180 degrees? Did AOC spit out green pea soup? No, I don't think that happened, so it must not have worked. he said, Father Conroy, this has been a difficult, contentious week in which darker spirits seem to have been at play in the people's house. In your most holy name, I now cast out all spirits of darkness from this chamber. Spirits, not from you. I cast out the spirit of discouragement, which deadens the hope of those who are of goodwill. And I cast out the spirit of petty divisiveness. I don't think it worked. I'm, you know, this is what I'm surprised. I'm surprised that Democrats didn't turn on these two guys and rip them to shreds like the seven sons of Sheba. Jesus, I know, but I don't know you Jesuits here. This is ultimately my goal every day, said one of the people. I want every member of the House to be able to say, I'm praying for our better angels. There's no question where the Vatican is on this issue, folks. Many conservative Catholics know this. They know where these guys are coming from. They are Marxists themselves. Oh, and I know. I told you last week when this all began. I told you beginning of the week. I said, look at this. You now got CNN saying that President Trump's remarks are racist, and he's talking about communism and Marxism and open borders and nations this and places that, contrasting the countries that they support with our country. They're calling it a race. And then AOC came out and said, well, it's just a dog whistle. You call somebody a communist, that's just a white supremacy dog whistle. Look, the Jesuits have been involved in liberation theology in South America. Conservative Catholics know this. Alex Newman has talked about this as a Catholic. They are for open borders, and they promote Marxism, and they're still doing it. The Vatican is now saying, we got to reject the use of the term minority, and we got to redefine citizenship.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I was talking about the Vatican is trying to change the use of our language, and that's only the tip of the iceberg. The real people who are out there trying to control our speech, and as I've said many times before, if you want to win an argument, the high ground is the terms that you use. If you can set the terms of discussion, if you control the labels, you've essentially taken the high ground of the debate, and you win. You win that debate. And that's what they've been doing for a long time, especially through AP. And I'm going to give you an example of that with the Associated Press and their style rules that continue to seize the high ground and win the culture war and the legal war and the political war just by the terms that they force everybody to use. But let's take a look at what the Vatican is doing now. They had a conference Thursday. There was a religious freedom event, they said, hosted by the U.S. Department of State. And at that event was Archbishop Gallagher from the Vatican. What he had to say was, he said, there's a need to develop and respect the concept of citizenship. Here's how he defined it. He said, the concept of citizenship is based on the equality of rights and duties under which we all enjoy justice. Okay, so far so good. But then he goes on. He says, it is crucial to establish in our societies the concept of full citizenship and reject the discriminatory use of the term minority, which engenders feelings of isolation and inferiority. And of course, he is starting to now talk about open borders, as Pope Francis has repeatedly talked about globalism, the evils of unfettered capitalism, about how evil it is. We have nationalism and walls. We need bridges and we need welfare. And we need to channel the support of all these people coming in through the country. We need to channel it through these different organizations like the Catholic Church and like the Lutherans and so forth, who are making so much money, millions of dollars of money, providing these services to people. Well, here's the issue, Archbishop Gallagher. These people are citizens. They are full citizens in their home country. They're just not citizens here in America. That's why I prefer the term. Here's my style sheet. Here's the David Knight InfoWars style sheet. Foreign citizens criminally trespassing. How about that? That's very specific. They're not just foreigners without a state. No, they do have a state. They are foreign citizens. You know, they're foreign citizens. They're citizens in Honduras or El Salvador or Mexico or the Congo or China, wherever, right? They're citizens somewhere. They're just not citizens here. And if they want to become citizens here, there is a process. End of story. And if they don't want to follow that process, they're criminally trespassing. And Pope Francis has been talking all the time about illegal immigration. Christians have to reject sovereignty and embrace globalism. You know, we are, I guess, citizens of the world, right? We're not citizens of any particular country. And so let's not talk about, you know, let's not isolate people as individuals. Oh, no, we're all just a one world government citizenship. And so then that brings us back to President Trump and how he's getting pushback against all these Republicans, including Fox News, Howard Kurtz. Howard Kurtz, and I've never seen his program. He's a Fox News analyst, a host of something called Media Buzz, Sunday mornings. So I've never seen his program. But he's got a big problem with President Trump. He's got a big problem with Republicans, too. Here's his op-ed piece that was published by Fox News. Trump versus the squad. The demonizing of dissent. You say, we're demons. We're demons. We've gone now from being deplorables, when Hillary Clinton called you to pull. Now, you got Mitch McConnell, you got Mitt Romney, you got Fox News calling you not deplorable, but actual demons. Demons. And, you know, that's why you have to have the Jesuits go to the House floor to try to exorcise this demonic spirit that is coming from President Trump and his voters. Got to exorcise that demonic spirit. This is what Howard Kurtz had to say. He said, you know, dissent in America can be messy, polarizing, excessive, but it is fundamentally healthy. And I don't agree with some of the rhetoric coming from the so-called squad, especially that of Omar. But they are U.S. citizens, and they are duly elected members of Congress. As president, says Howard Kurtz of Fox News on the Fox News site, he says, Trump has harshly criticized the FBI, the Department of Justice, the CIA, Congress, the courts, and the fake news media. Shame on him. Shame on President Trump. Why would President Trump criticize stellar institutions like the FBI, the CIA, and the Department of Justice that tried to overthrow our election, have been lying to us for 2 years and still are lying to us in a massive conspiracy theory that's been debunked over and over again? We've debunked it for years here, and they're still lying about that, still pretending that it's real. Still pretending the Russians gave us Hillary Clinton's emails. And if they did, thank you, Vladimir Putin. You didn't do it. I know you didn't do it. We had William Binney and others say, technically, it's not possible. WikiLeaks, Julian Assange, the people who have never lied to us, said we didn't get it from a state source. We got it from a whistleblower inside. William Binney proved it, technically. But, of course, we have to kowtow and pretend that that happened, right? I say to whoever did it, to the whistleblower who actually did it, or to the imagined Russians who turned it over, thank you. You told us the truth about Hillary Clinton, and it cost her the election. Great. Great. Anyway, yeah, why would, you know, President Trump, he's just so hateful, says Howard Kurtz at Fox News. He has criticized the FBI, the Department of Justice, the CIA. These people who have violated their oath of office, they violated the law. They have conspired criminally with foreign governments and foreign intelligence services in the UK to try to overthrow the American election and the American president. And the fake media has and still is pushing that conspiracy. They ran it through in a circular process. They leaked information to the media. When the media published it, they took that, used that to get a phony FISA warrant. And the courts supported all that kind of stuff. The courts are telling President Trump that he can't do what he has authority to, what he has a duty to do, and that is to protect our borders. You dare to criticize these out-of-control, arrogant lawyers in dresses? How dare him, says Fox News's Howard Kurtz. Yeah, that's where we are right here. just because you lambast conditions in America doesn't mean you hate America. Well, I'm telling you what. America is not the FBI, the Department of Justice, CIA, Congress, and the fake news media. Howard Kurtz thinks if you criticize that, you're criticizing America and our most cherished institutions. What did President Trump criticize? Again, I'll remind you what he had to say, and I'll emphasize this because he's not talking about a race. So interesting to see progressive Democrat Congress women. Women, he said women. Sexist. Okay. Who came mostly, who originally came from countries whose governments are complete and total catastrophe. The worst, most corrupt, inept anywhere in the world, even if they have a functioning government at all. Now loudly and viciously telling the people of the United States, the greatest, most powerful nation on earth, how our government is to be run. Only Omar was born outside the U.S., and all four were elected to the House of Representatives, where their job is literally to govern this country. Why don't they go back and help fix the totally broken and crime-infested places from which they came? These places that they like. That is actually what he had to say. And let's go ahead. We've got a clip here that's really short. We can fit this in. Video clip number 6. This is President Trump continuing on with that.
Well, the Democratic Party is really going in a direction that nobody thought possible. They're going so far left, they're going to fall off a cliff. So I think they're making a big mistake, but who knows? That's up to them.
Well, if you call somebody leftist, if you call them Marxist, if you point out that they're socialist or communist in their philosophy, that is racist now. Racist and sexist. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. Yeah, we have President Trump has now apologized, but we haven't had any apologies from the squad about their literally incendiary rhetoric. Their rhetoric that caused an Antifa terrorist to commit a violent act, arson, get killed in the process. They have nothing at all, nothing to say about that. But let's talk about the language. And of course, there's a great clip from G. Edward Griffin. Somebody sent me on social media yesterday. As a matter of fact, if you want to follow me, you can follow me on Twitter, Libertarian. Libertarian. And they sent me this clip. I retweeted it, but I want you to hear what G. Edward Griffin said in 1969. He knew exactly. How did he know this? Smart guy. He hasn't diminished a bit, but he's changed in appearance a little bit. Of course, his book that he's most famous for is the Monster from Jekyll Island, I think is what it's called. The Creature from Jekyll Island. Yes, thank you. And talking about the creation of the Federal Reserve. But here's what he had to say about how language would be used, specifically race, would be used to attack and to silence people. G. Edward Griffin, 1969, Video 1.
In 1943, the following directive was issued from party headquarters to all communists in the United States. It read, "When certain obstructionists become too irritating, label them, after suitable buildups, as fascist or Nazi or anti-Semitic, and use the prestige of anti-fascist and tolerance organizations to discredit them. In the public mind, constantly associate those who oppose us with those names which already have a bad smell. The association will, after enough repetition, become fact in the public mind."
Whoa, you hear that? Use anti-fascist organizations to shut them down if they call you a communist, right? What did AOC do? AOC said, you call somebody a communist, you're nothing but a white supremacy group. He said, associate them with groups that have a certain smell to them. And you just repeat that association, racist, fascist, and it'll stick after a while. So let's take a look at the AP style book. You know, Brian Erickson from the Washington Examiner says, it's very troubling now that AP has again changed the style rules because they set up the terms of debate to make sure the left always wins these arguments. It's exactly what G. Edward Griffin said in 1969. So now, the Associated Press style book, as reported by WND, says writers are to, quote, call out racism. And you need to decide for yourself whether it's racist or not. And you need to label it as such. So you make the call. You don't say, oh, allegedly racist or perhaps it's racially charged or something. They, as a matter of fact, at AP said, do not use racially charged or similar terms as euphemism for racist or racism when racist and racism are truly applicable. So, yeah, don't use any euphemism. Just go straight for the jugular and call everybody you disagree with racist. AP goes on to say, if racist is not the appropriate term, give careful thought to how to best describe the situation. Alternatives include racially divisive, racially sensitive, or in some cases simply racial. But please, you know, to paraphrase what they're saying, please call your opponents racist, the people you don't like. And so Brian Erickson at the Washington Examiner said CNN is following their advice. They denounced President Trump's recent string of tweets as racist. One CNN article written by a breaking news reporter said President Donald Trump used racist language on Sunday to attack progressive Democratic congresswomen. Again, that whole term, progressive. What a bunch of baloney. They're not progressive at all. They're regressive. This is an idea that's a throwback to the late 1800s. It's an idea that killed over 100 million people in the 20th century. Authoritarian communism. Call it what it is. While Trump's tweets certainly allude to race and could undoubtedly be described as racially divisive, says Erickson, whether or not they're racist should be up to the readers and the commentators to decide, not ostensibly objective reporters. Oh, but see, there is no such thing as an objective reporter. What you choose to report on, folks, as I've said many times, shows what you're interested in, what your bias is. This is why people will call Matt Drudge, oh, he's a conservative, he's a Republican or whatever, because he's looking at things from a kind of a conservative Republican viewpoint, and so those are the stories that he finds interesting. But he pulls up stories from all sources. You know, New York Times, Washington Post, the fake news, fake corporate news. He doesn't discriminate. As a matter of fact, sometimes that really does make our point when we just let them speak. That's why we need to have free speech. Anyway, he goes on to say, in fact, much of the political universe has been debating whether or not the tweets were racist and not for or not for days. So it's clearly not an objective fact for a reporter to state about a given situation. And he goes back, talks about how in 2013, for example, what happened to the term Islamist? Well, you had AP come out with their style sheet at the time, and they said, don't use the term Islamist. Use the terms fighters or militants. And they did this because they were lobbied heavily by CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. They said, we don't want you to use the term Islamist. Use the terms fighters or militants when something like that happens. And they did the same thing to talk about illegal immigrants. And when they did that years ago, Jay Leno said, well, if we can't say illegal immigrants, we've got to say undocumented people coming in. Jay Leno said, why don't you just call them undocumented Democrats? That's exactly right. At the Gatestone Institute, writes WND, A.Z. Muhammad said, the main facet of this PC tyranny, so perfectly predicted by Orwell, is the inversion of good and evil, calling the victims victimized. He said there is an attempt in the West to impose a strict set of rules about what one is allowed to think and express in academia and in the media, and I would say also in social media, of course. Your speech is being controlled. So you don't, you're not writing for a living, you're not publishing for a living, but you are exercising your free speech as a citizen on social media. That's why they're purging you, silencing you, shadow banning you, sometimes taking you off the platform. He says that there's an imposed a strict set of rules to the point that anyone who disobeys is discredited, demonized. There's that word again, demonized. Call in the Jesuits. We need another exorcist right here. Intimidated and in danger of losing his or her livelihood. It's toxic. It's reminiscent of Orwell's view of a diseased society. And so as President Trump is hammered by everybody, Republican and Democrat, to disavow those supporters in North Carolina. And he did, but it wasn't good enough. Was not good enough. CNN comes on. Trump claims to disavow racist chants. See, they go right for the jugular. Racist, says CNN. That's their headline. Claims to disavow the racist chant. All of those people in North Carolina, they're all racist. And Trump needs to disavow them. And he did, but it's not good enough for CNN. They said, you know, he's got to do it again. He claims to do it, but he's got to do it again. You say you did, but you didn't do it, right? And they said, even his daughter, Ivanka, is telling him he's got to do this. And I can believe that. Ivanka is nothing but a clone of Chelsea Clinton. They went to all the same schools. They think alike. They walk alike. They talk alike. It's sometimes it's like the Patty Duke show to see Chelsea Clinton and Ivanka. But let's play for you. Just remind you of how these two would not disavow the actual terrorist attack. Video clip number two, Ilhan Omar, when asked about the terror attack.
Will you condemn the Antifa attack in Washington over the weekend? It's easy to condemn terrorism. Will you condemn it?
Is it fear?
No, she will not condemn it.
Antifa firebombed a facility in Tacoma over the weekend. It's an ICE facility. Will you condemn them for that? I mean, firebombing a concentration camp is kind of a laudable thing if it actually is a concentration camp. You must be happy that they did it, no?
Yep,
are you pleased? Should more people do it? It's easy to say no.
Ah, but she will not disavow the actual violence.
It's really easy to say no.
Will not. Will not do it. All right, I'll play for you when we come back after the break. I'll play for you AOC. Same thing. He asked the same questions. Great job, that reporter. Will not disavow that. But, of course, President Trump, with prodding from Mitt Romney and from Mitch McConnell and from all these Republicans and from all the fake news media, he disavows his racist supporters. You know, Ivanka. Oh, disavow them, Daddy. And so, yeah, we'll have more of that when we come back. Folks, we still have our 1776 Worldwide special at InfoWarsStore.com. Don't forget to look at the products that we have there. We try to make this a win-win situation for you, but we really do need your support. You've been very good about supporting us. We try to make these specials very effective for you. And, of course, with the 1776 special, we have at least 10% off everything in the store. Some items are up to 75% off, things like Brain Force Plus, my favorite supplement we have. We have Survival Shield X2 and X3, Nascent Iodine. We have our Ultra 12.
Reverse engineering the high-tech takeover plan. This is The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I played for you an absolutely amazing clip. As a matter of fact, I want to play that clip again. You need to hear this clip from G. Edward Griffin, 1969. I've said many times, talked about how Bill Ayers, the Weather Underground, and those people popularized the term white skin privilege. They wanted to have a division in American society. They were not able to achieve it by breaking the country into economic classes, because we didn't have that kind of rigid economic stratification of classes like they did in Europe. So they wanted to use race, perceived race, skin color, let's just call it that. Because, again, as I said, as a Christian, I don't see people. There's a human race, and the only question is which direction they're racing, you know. But, again, J. Edward Griffin said in 1969, he said, this is coming from the Communist Party headquarters. What they're telling people is when they call you a communist, you call them a fascist. You present yourself as anti-fascist. 1969, he said this. What do they call themselves today? And what did we see AOC say this week? She said, oh, you call me a communist? That is just a dog whistle for race, racism, white supremacy. Right out of the playbook. Right out of the playbook. 50-year-old playbook. Here's G. Edward Griffin again. Run that clip.
In 1943, the following directive was issued from party headquarters to all communists in the United States. It read, when certain obstructionists become too irritating, label them after suitable buildups as fascist or Nazi or anti-Semitic, and use the prestige of anti-fascist and tolerance organizations to discredit them. In the public mind, constantly associate those who oppose us with those names which already have a bad smell. The association will, after enough repetition, become fact in the public mind.
So you call people that oppose you white supremacists, and it becomes a fact because you've got people like CNN that repeat that. And, of course, that was 50 years ago. And he was reading then from a document from inside the Communist Party USA that was 13 years old at the time. So it's 63 years old, this agenda that they're now enacting. And here is the woman who is calling President Trump and all of his supporters in North Carolina white supremacists, racists, anybody that criticizes her as a communist, which she is, the policies that she supports, the policies that Ilhan Omar supports. You take a look at her campaign website, Ilhan's vision. What is it? It's nothing but full-on Marxism. Her vision is the vision of the Communist Party USA from the early 20th century. And that is that's literally the case, folks. I'm not just calling people that I disagree with commies. This is the plan of the Communist Party, has been for 100 years. And when she was confronted, I just played for you Ilhan Omar, confronted by the rebel media reporter, will you disavow this guy who created this violent attack? No, she won't say anything. Here is the clip. Let's play what AOC did. As she was on her way to denounce President Trump as a racist, she would not disavow this guy who had just committed a violent act of terrorism. Here's a clip.
Will you condemn Antifa for the attack in Washington?
We'll be making statements.
It's easy to condemn a terrorist attack.
No, not for her. Not for a Marxist.
Will you be condemning Antifa? They firebombed an American facility. Will you condemn them?
Nope. Nope.
Excuse us, we have to go to the
minute. No
reply. Will you be condemning them?
No reply.
Do you feel like you have some responsibility in the attack with your rhetoric about concentration camps? Are you responsible? Do you feel ashamed?
Well, he said in his manifesto that that's exactly why he was doing it, because they had incited him to do it. They told him that was concentration camps, so he had to go there to destroy them. They told him that they were fighting the fascist Nazis with their concentration camps, but they will not disavow. President Trump, however, will. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Let's take a little bit more look at how the Associated Press, AP, and their style book controls political discourse and really wins the debates for the left. Again, as The Hill pointed out, beginning of July, Rachel Alexander wrote an op-ed piece talking about the bias of AP style. And again, they've done it yet again just recently. They've said, if you think it's racist, it is racist. So just don't shy away from using that term. You make that call as a reporter. Feel free to call anybody you don't like racist. And they've done this before. As I said, back in 2013, they got rid of the any connection between Islam and Islamic terrorism. Oh, just call these people fighters. Fighters. They don't use the term Islamicist after CARE lobbied them, the Council on American Islamic Relations. What she had to say at the beginning of July was talking about how they use the terms pro-life and pro-choice. She said, a pro-life author who submits a piece taking a position against abortion will see the words pro-life changed to anti-abortion because the AP style book instructs, use anti-abortion instead of pro-life and pro-abortion rights instead of pro-abortion or pro-choice. See, it's not even pro-choice. They don't prefer, they don't even like pro-choice. It's got to be pro-abortion rights. Avoid using the term abortionist, they said. That connotes a person who performs clandestine abortions. And see, this, as I've talked about when I interviewed Phelim McAleer about both his book and the movie, Gosnell. You know, first they did the book about Kermit Gosnell, the abortionist, the fact that he went to jail for the murder of full-term babies, which is now Democrat policy in many states, and the death of a woman of color, a refugee immigrant, who, when things went wrong in his clinic, people could not get to her, get her out of there on a gurney because of the way the halls were constructed too narrowly, the doorways are too narrow. So they charged him with that murder as well. But they wanted to plug the movie, Gosnell. Had Dean Cain, many others, a very excellent film. If you haven't seen it, I highly suggest watching that. And then that should get you interested enough to read the book and get the rest of the story. But they do a great job with it. It's basically a courtroom drama. And it shows the bias of the reporters and others. And the marketing campaign, where they could not get NPR to approve any ad because they had referred to Gosnell as an abortionist. Well, of course they couldn't, because that violates the AP style rules. You can't use the term abortionist. That's a banned word. The corporate media, and that includes NPR, even though they're taxpayer funded. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, right? They ban certain terms. And by banning certain terms, they control the debate. You're not going to be pro-life. You're not even going to be pro-choice. You're going to be pro-abortion rights. Abortion rights. You're in favor of abortion rights. And you cannot use terms like abortionist. And so that's why, of course, they would not let them use that. But they would not even let them, when they promoted the movie Gosnell, not even let them call him an abortion doctor. No. Not going to do that, said NPR. And so they go on to say, words related to terrorism are sanitized in the AP style book. For example, instead of using the term Islamist or terrorist, you have to say things like a militant, a long wolf, a lone wolf, or an attacker. Instead of migrant or refugee, you use the term people struggling to enter Europe. She doesn't have in here, instead of anchor baby. Remember how that reporter lectured President Trump? No, I don't use the term anchor baby. Well, what do you say, says President Trump? And he goes, what would you say? And he would go, I would call them children of undocumented immigrants entering America, born in America. And President Trump said, I think I'll call them anchor babies. And his support shot straight up in the polls. We're sick of people who are controlling our language. We understand that. But you don't always see this. This is why I want to go through the AP style sheet. Illegal immigrant, undocumented, are no longer acceptable. Neither, of course, is illegals or alien. They were already forbidden a few years ago. If you look up amnesty, there's no connection in the AP style sheet to illegal immigration. Oh, no. We're not going to use the term amnesty either. Amnesty is only in terms of things like pardons or paroles or probation. When we talk about firearms, AP doesn't want you to use the term semi-automatic rifles. No, no, no. You will use the term, says the Associated Press in their style sheet, you will use the term assault weapons, preferably assault rifles now. And also use the term military style to refer to these. Anybody who does not support full-on all of the man-made climate change must be labeled climate change deniers. And that is, according to the AP style sheet, that is used to describe those who don't accept climate science or dispute that the world is warming from man-made forces. Use climate change doubters or those who reject mainstream climate science. Do not use the term skeptic. Do not use the term skeptic. Let me tell you something. Skepticism is the basis of all real science. There is never any settled science. And this science is certainly not settled. We just had two major studies come out from two different countries, Finland and Japan, saying there is no man-made warming. What you people have failed to include in your models are some significant factors that you never accounted for. Nevertheless, going on with the labels that AP imposes on everybody. They said, try to avoid describing political leanings. Have you noticed that? They never call anybody a right-wing Republican, right? Never, never that. Do you ever see them describe any Democrats as left-wing? No. They will call us a conspiracy theory website, right? They won't ever call us, they won't acknowledge the fact that we have broadcasts that you're listening to on radio, on television. They discourage the use of the phrase ultra-rightist, but of course that is used, along with right-wing, alt-right, to describe just regular Americans, right? Because regular Americans don't have a lobbying group like the Council on American Islamic Relations do. Just go back to 2010 and look at NPR at that point in time when we're talking about pro-life issue. NPR, 2010, March 18th, 2010. In the abortion debate, words matter. Oh, yes, they do. And they begin by talking about a woman. Martha Hamilton winces when she hears an NPR correspondent describe politicians who oppose abortion as, and they put it in quotes, pro-life. Because the only time, according to AP, that you can use the term pro-life is if you put it in quotes. And so every time they refer to pro-life in this article in 2010, they put it in quotes. Oh, they call it pro-life. I am a pro-life voter, she said. For instance, I would vote for someone opposed to the death penalty over someone in favor of it. So understand, she is pro-life only if it is an adult person who's murdered somebody and been found guilty of a jury, right? Now, I have a problem with the death penalty because I have a problem with the justice system, but I don't have a problem with putting to death somebody who has murdered other people. I do have a problem putting to death innocent babies, but she doesn't have a problem killing innocent babies. She has a problem killing mass murderers. That's how she defines, quote unquote, pro-life. And so if you're going to describe it that way, I would put it in quotes as well. And then NPR goes on to say, since 2005, it's been NPR's policy to use the term pro-choice to identify anyone who advocates on behalf of abortion rights, and pro-life for anyone who advocates in opposition to abortion. The terms pro-choice and pro-life are in such widespread use these days that they're just as neutral in their alternatives, they said. And they quoted that out of a 2005 memo, and they were quick to point out that memo was authored by three people who no longer work at NPR. So what they're saying is, we're moving away from pro-life. Now they have moved away from pro-choice. Now it is pro-abortion rights. Oh, you got to catch up. You know, that's, you got to be politically correct. You got to understand how to use the words. They matter. Welcome back. You know, to sum up what NPR said back in 2010 as they were saying why they were not going to ever use the term pro-life anymore. They said by positioning themselves as pro-life, these people have essentially won the war of words. And so they're going to win the war of words. They're going to pick the terms. That's why they use terms like pro-abortion rights, or why they use the term assault rifle, or why they use the term racist, or why they use the term undocumented immigrant. By picking those terms, they have won the war. By blocking you from saying certain things, they have won the war. If they can go to President Trump and say, President Trump, your supporters, that massive crowd there in North Carolina, they're all racist. They're all white supremacists. They've won the war. And President Trump disavows. But it's not enough. It'll never be enough. Do it again, says CNN. He claims that he disavows these people. But do it again. And AOC and Ilhan, none of those people, Ariana Presley, none of these people disavow the violence and the terrorism of this guy who, you know, attacked the facility, firebombed it, was shot to death after they told him it was a concentration camp. They were the ones who incited this. They incited actual violence. Can you imagine if the crowd at the North Carolina rally had left there and attacked a mosque? If just one person out of tens of thousands of people had left that Trump rally and attacked a mosque, can you imagine the outrage against President Trump and how he would grovel before them if that were to happen? And yet these arrogant mod squads, quad squads, the traveling sisterhood of traveling burkas, that they won't even respond. They say nothing because they can't say anything. There is no way that they can explain their actions or the actions of that terrorist that they incited. And so they remain silent. But let's take a look at a little bit at this pro-life stuff here. You know, we just had, how should I phrase this to make it palatable to the Associated Press and their style sheet? Should I say that the Planned Parenthood CEO has had her CEO rights terminated? Was she aborted? You know, this CEO of Planned Parenthood? Maybe Planned Parenthood exercised their right of termination and aborted her. Let's talk about this. She only lasted for 8 months. And her ouster tells us something very important about Planned Parenthood and their true agenda. She was a doctor. Do you know this is the first time they've had a doctor as CEO of Planned Parenthood? Isn't that strange for an organization that's all about women's health? They never had a doctor lead it. Never had a doctor lead it. They've had a eugenicist. They had the Bush family patriarch as their treasurer. They've never had a doctor, however. But it's all about health care, right? Or is it? She tweeted out, "I just learned that the Planned Parenthood board ended my employment at a secret meeting." Ooh, a little bit of resentment there. Later, she said that she and the board chairs had, quote, philosophical differences over the direction and the future of Planned Parenthood. Well, what might that be? Very cryptic. A secret meeting where the philosophical differences came out. She said, "As a physician and a public health leader, I came to Planned Parenthood to lead a national health care organization that provides essential primary and preventative care to millions of underserved women and families, and to advocate for a broader range of policies that affect our patients' health." Maybe that's the issue. Maybe that's the philosophical difference. Maybe you had a doctor who was coming to provide health care, and she had a philosophical difference with the board because they just want to kill babies. Maybe that's it. Well, no, she's a big supporter of abortion as well. She said, "I believe the best way to protect abortion care is to be clear. It's not a political issue, but a health care one." But she wasn't pro-abortion enough, as a matter of fact. We got many people who have pointed this out. Washington Examiner, Rich Lowry at Politico. What her firing tells us about Planned Parenthood is that, of course, their priority is abortion and not health care. That's what everybody is obviously seeing here, right? For the longest time, Planned Parenthood has insisted that it's a health care organization, but it only cares about abortion. They would tell people, as Rich Lowry says, "Abortion, don't be silly. We're all about pap tests and breast exams. But the hiring of Wynn as president seemed to be the natural extension for this line of argument. How serious is Planned Parenthood about health care? Well, look at this. For the first time in our existence, we've hired a doctor to lead us. So we're really serious about health care." And then she doesn't last but for 8 months. And she had come to them after being, she was once a health commissioner of Baltimore. BuzzFeed was very excited about that. They thought they had a win here. They had a headline, "Planned Parenthood's new president wants to focus on non-abortion health care." That's the philosophical difference with the leadership of Planned Parenthood. And then she said, our core mission is providing, protecting, and expanding access to abortion and reproductive health care. But she wasn't devoted enough to abortion, so they had to get her out. Because, you know, Planned Parenthood, by their own admission, their annual report, says that they do about 330,000 abortions a year in the country. It is 97% of their business. And so if you don't make your 97% of your business the number one job, you have a philosophical difference with the people there. And just to underscore that this isn't just perception, Planned Parenthood is foregoing federal funding rather than comply with the Trump administration rule. What is that horrible rule? Well, it is a rule of informed consent. We're not going to comply with a regulation, they said, that would require health care providers to not give full information to their patients. Really? How does that work? Accepting the boundary between abortion and family planning is a compromise on care. Do these people support fully informed consent when it comes to vaccines? No. The same people in the same political party, many of them the same doctors who support abortion, do not want you to have informed consent when it comes to vaccines. And the same people who are saying, my body, my choice, don't say that when it comes to stem cells and your own stem cells being used to treat your disease effectively, far more effectively, far safer than anything that Big Pharma has to add. So the hypocrisy is absolutely amazing on the part of Planned Parenthood. But then this former president had gone on to say, when they're talking about how they're going to forego taking any money from the federal government because they want to be able to tell people what all the choices are, she attacked crisis pregnancy centers. Oh, she said, they shame and deter people from getting abortions. Why would that happen? Is that because they're giving them full information, because they're actually showing them pictures of the baby moving inside their body and showing them that it is not simply their body that is involved here, but there's another body, a different blood type in many cases, a different sex in many cases, half the cases. It is another body that we're talking about there. And when we come back, I'm going to show you how they tell people the truth about abortion and see what you think about that. All right, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're also going to talk about what's going on with Iran, some new developments there. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Welcome back. I've got one more video clip here that I want to show you of Planned Parenthood. As we're talking about the abortion of the Planned Parenthood CEO. She was aborted. Maybe she has had an abortion. I don't know. But she was aborted herself from the corporation. She came in, the first doctor they've ever had. There apparently was a philosophical difference there because she wanted to talk about health care. 97% of their business is abortion. It's like, hey, get with the program, lady. But this is, part of the issue that is happening right now is there's a new rule from the Trump administration says you're going to tell people honestly what's going on here. They don't want to do that. And they hate these crisis pregnancy centers because the way that they explain abortion, and I'm going to show this to you in this video. They take a watermelon and they say, this is your uterus, okay? And we're going to just show, this is absolutely not a problem. You know, we just, and this is not a gory video, so you don't have to avert your eyes or send the kids away. As a matter of fact, they make it as sanitized as possible. You don't even see any red fluid coming out as they're informing the people who are watching this procedure how they're just removing pregnancy tissue. See, this is how Planned Parenthood fully informs you about what's going on. Let's take a look at that video 8.
So this would go through the cervix and into the uterus, and then we create suction to remove pregnancy tissue. And this doesn't work as well as it would with a papaya. But this is what we would use for about an 8-week pregnancy, so for about 2 months, and you get a wee little watermelon fetus.
It's just a watermelon. It's just,
And this is why we fight to make sure that advanced practice
physicians
can provide early abortion care, because it is not surgery. It is basic health care. It's easy to do. It is safe. We need more providers.
It's not surgery.
It's well within the scope of practice.
Yay.
Nurse practitioners, PAs, family practice doctors who don't need to be a board certified OBGYN. It is also the identical care for managing a miscarriage. So when we restrict access to abortion care and abortion training, we are also preventing clinicians from understanding how to appropriately care for people who are losing pregnancies naturally. So this is really important. Thank you for watching our abortion.
Thank you. You guys, thank you so much.
So that's it. That's the way Planned Parenthood explains it to you. They show you a watermelon. They tell you, this is not a surgical procedure. It's just we're removing pregnancy tissue like this watermelon. You know, this is no more alive than this watermelon. The watermelon, of course, with the beating heart. and yet, the former Planned Parenthood president, who was evidently too much about health care, had nothing but scorn for people at crisis pregnancy centers. She said they falsely depict themselves as health centers when their only purpose is to misinform, shame, and deter anyone seeking safe, legal abortions. So you can go to the abortion clinic run by Planned Parenthood, and they'll tell you, we're going to remove some pregnancy tissue, and it's not a surgical procedure. It's just like this watermelon thing. Or you could go to a crisis pregnancy center. They'll hook you up to an ultrasound. You can hear see the heartbeat. You can see the baby move in 3D in some of these places. But don't pay attention to them, because those people are lying to you. They're lying to you, absolutely. Let's talk about what's going on with Iran. You know, I couldn't see anybody else yesterday talking about the hope that Rand Paul was going to be talking to the Iranian foreign minister to try to de-escalate things on behalf of President Trump. The oil markets got wind of it, and the price of oil dropped, because this is not just an issue of life and death. It's not just the issue of legality, morality, and what kind of a country we're going to be. But, you know, it's an issue of life and death, but it's also an issue of money. Maybe people will pay attention to that. No, nobody paid attention to it. I think I'm the only one who covered it on any of the news stories yesterday. Everybody was talking about Rand Paul and why he was concerned about the 9/11 victim fund. As he pointed out, I've always said, if you're going to spend money, you got to talk about how you're going to pay for that somewhere else. And I do that with every issue, not just with this one. I mean, you know, when you look at the defense budget and how we spend more than the rest of the world combined on defense, more than everybody else combined, more than Russia and China and everybody else combined. How the amount that we've increased our defense funding over the last two authorizations, the last two NDAAs, the increase that we had the last two times is greater than the entire military budget of the Soviet Union. But we can't move any money away from that to help the 9/11 victims, because, you know, they're Americans. We can't do nothing about Americans. We can't do nothing about the American border. Why? That's not what the Defense Department is about. It's not about defending the border of America. We can't use any money for that. We can't use any troops for that. But they're going to send some more troops to the Middle East. Hopefully they can have a war there. And so, as The Guardian is pointing out, Iran denies that Donald Trump claimed that the U.S. destroyed a drone in the Strait of Hormuz, they say. President Trump said the USS Boxer took defensive action after a drone came within 1,000 yards of the warship, the USS Boxer, an American warship, and that it ignored multiple calls to stand down. Well, it might be because it's a drone. Nobody on board. Same type of thing that we heard from the Iranians when the American drone was shot down. We gave multiple calls for the drone to turn back, and it didn't do it. So we shut it down. They all give multiple warnings to these drones, and the drones somehow just aren't listening. Anyway, President Trump said the drone was immediately destroyed. Iran denied his claims. When I saw that, I thought, does Iran really have drones? I mean, are they like really drones? Or are they like the drones that you buy off of eBay, you know, with a camera on it? Because I've seen their Navy. Their Navy is kind of like what you see out here on Lake Travis on weekends, right? Yeah, they can destroy a ship with some suicide bombers, but they weren't able to capture a freighter. But they now have. They now have. They've escalated that. They came back and said, "We've not lost any drones in the Strait of Hormuz, nor anywhere else. I'm worried that the USS Boxer has shot down their own drone by mistake." They said, "All of our drones that belong to Iran in the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz returned safely to all their bases after their mission of identification and control." Well, so, you know, we'll see what happens with that. They did admit that they took over a Panamanian freighter. So things are still looking a bit dodgy. But nobody is talking about the hope that we could avoid a war, hope that we could somehow find a way to tamp this down after people like John Bolton, Mike Pompeo, and others in the military-industrial complex have escalated this, like I talked about yesterday. You got the situation in Libya, that poor, destitute country, where both the Libyan government, supported by the UN, and the rebel government have now hired lobbyists on Capitol Hill. $2 million paid by the government of Libya for lobbyists, and other lobbyists have been hired by the warlord there, because that's really where you're going to fight the battle. It's going to be in the halls of Congress, and you're going to fight it with money. That's how we fight with money, right? Defense contractors are tightening their grip on government, reports Zero Hedge. Imagine back in 1961, if Dwight Eisenhower, when he warned us about the dangers of unwarranted influence and the military-industrial complex, imagine if he would have looked ahead to today to see that Lockheed Martin is now getting $50 billion in government contracts. That, in and of itself, is bigger than the entire operating budget of the State Department. Raytheon, already one of the top five U.S. defense contractors, is planning to merge with United Technologies. Folks, you need to follow the money. Follow the money. Look at how these people are destroying lives, destroying countries, destroying our freedoms, robbing us blind. And they're about to do it again if they start a war in the Middle East, because they're going to blow up the world economy. That area where all the world's a third of the world's oil goes through there. I mean, if you don't care about human life, if you don't care about morality, think about the money involved here. Think about how we are being controlled and ripped off by these giant corporations who are selling war. That's all this is about. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're just talking about the money that is fueling war. But it's also money that is fueling the political debate. Because, you know, as H.L. Mencken said, an election is an advanced auction of stolen goods. And maybe you don't have to steal it. Maybe you can just print it. But you're still stealing it. You're stealing it from the future generations. Because they're going to have to pay it back with interest, or they're going to have to pay it back with a debased currency, which can collapse the country in and of itself. All this concern about crypto that you see on Capitol Hill, they tell us, oh, you know, we got to be careful. And it is a challenge to the hegemony of the American dollar, or I should say the petrodollar, the dollar that is backed now not by gold, but by our reliable terrorist partners, Saudi Arabia. And we don't want them to cut the head off of the American dollar. I mean, we got all these heads of former presidents that are on the dollar. But as Daily Caller points out, there's a big issue that all the 2020 candidates keep ignoring. You know, we talk about the fact that, you know, just one corporation, Lockheed Martin, $50 billion, more than the entire budget of the State Department. And then you got other giant, that's just one of the giant military-industrial complex companies. And, you know, they're all making lots of money, because if we're going to spend more money on the military-industrial complex than every other country in the world combined, and that's not as big as the welfare state. The defense budget, the warfare state, is smaller than the welfare state in terms of finances. None of the 20 Democratic candidates or even talking about the national debt. You're not going to see any questions about that from MSNBC, right? Anytime somebody says, well, how do we pay for it? Well, you know, we have this new thing. It's called the MMT, the modern monetary theory. You know, because that lie from John Maynard Keynes, the Keynesian economics, that's starting to get kind of thin. So they've got another one, a new theory. I prefer to call it the magic money theory. Not modern, but magic is what this monetary theory is. And, of course, President Trump is not talking about it either. As Daily Caller point out, in the promises kept section of President Trump's reelection website, there is absolutely no mention of the national debt, which is going to be growing this year at the rate of $1 trillion. Remember how it was edging up $0.5 trillion, $0.75 trillion, $0.8 trillion, all these different years under Obama, and we're looking at this and say, look at this, the cumulative debt's going 15, 16, 17, 18, 20 trillion, and now it's growing at an even faster rate under President Trump. And he didn't want to talk about it either. Neither does Rush Limbaugh, as Reason Magazine pointed out. Rush Limbaugh abandons fiscal conservatism. He heavily criticized Obama for excessive spending, but now he says it doesn't matter. He had a caller, they said, on Wednesday. The caller said, in 2019, there's going to be a $1 trillion deficit. Trump really doesn't care about that. He's not really a fiscal conservative. We have to acknowledge that Trump has been cruelly used. And Rush Limbaugh says, nobody is a fiscal conservative anymore. All this talk about concern for the deficit and the budget has been bogus for as long as it's been around. Very interesting. You know, when Ross Perot died, went back and looked at some of the stuff that he had to say. I knew about the NAFTA stuff and everything, and I'd kind of forgotten how much of a budget hawk Ross Perot was. Ross Perot was very serious about that. As a matter of fact, he had a plan to cut spending as well as to increase taxes. And people at that time realized that we had to have some kind of fiscal sanity. As a matter of fact, you go back to 2012, as this Reason Magazine article points out, talking about Rush, when it was Obama that was spending like a drunken sailor. But, of course, you know, Ronald Reagan said, don't say that Congress is spending money like a drunken sailor. That's unfair to drunken sailors. Rush is telling his viewers that Obama was a coward without the gonads to fess up to it. In 2012, responding to a story that Obama was a responsible spender who was concerned about government debt, Rush said this. He said, they're admitting that big spending is a huge problem and pointing to this piece, hey, it isn't me, it isn't me. They're admitting, they're accepting the premise, if you will, the Tea Party premise, our premise, that Obama's spending is reckless, that it's dangerous, that it is destroying the future, your kids and your grandkids. That's why the Tea Party exists. People know this is happening. But what is Rush saying today? Reason Magazine quoted this. How many years have people tried to scare everybody about the deficit? How many years, how many decades have politicians tried to scare us about the deficit, the national debt? Jim Sasser pronounced it the deficit. Any number of things. Yet, here we're still here. And the great jaws of the deficit haven't bitten off our heads and chewed them up and spit them out. That's what people always say. You know, that's the roadrunner scenario. You just run off the cliff and you keep running for a while. Even after you look down and see there's nothing underneath your feet, you can hang up there in space for a little while. Bernie Sanders, of course, is out there saying, I want Medicare for all, and ain't going to cost $60 trillion. It'll only cost $40 trillion. Only $40 trillion. Is that all? Oh, that's good. That's good. He's pulled that down. And how do we know? Because we don't know how many people are going to come in here and demand free health care, and they want to give it to everybody who comes to America, right? And so I was wondering, how much money is there in America? Well, let's just take in the world, not just the entire world. Let's take America, for example. Going back to 2013, I found an article that was pretty detailed. They talked about, well, we got four different measurements of money, M0, M1, M2, M3. M1 represents all the currency in the M0 money supply, plus all the money held in checking accounts. Okay, so, you know, in the currency, M0, according to the Federal Reserve, that was in 2013, $1.2 trillion. I'm going to have to take all that cash to pay for that thing, right? If you include all the money in checking accounts, that's about $2.5 trillion. If you pull in M2, that's the M1, plus all the money held in money market funds and savings accounts and CDs under $100,000. That was about $10.5 trillion. Then M3 is larger CDs. The Federal Reserve stopped reporting that back in 2006. But they said, well, if we look at all this stuff and total it all together, you know, we come up with about $15 trillion. All the money that the Federal Reserve says, all the money in the checking accounts, all the money in cash, all the money in CDs that are put out there by the Federal Reserve. And these Democrats have just one program. Oh, let's spend $40 trillion. Well, they got $15 trillion, all the money in the United States. Just to kind of put that into perspective. And so the story yesterday was not about Rand Paul perhaps trying to walk us back from a useless, unwarranted, illegal, immoral war with Iran. But the whining every day, everywhere yesterday was about the fact that John Stewart wants him to just hand out some more cash without paying for it anywhere. You're going to raise taxes, you're going to cut a program, maybe you cut some spending on some of the war machine, on some of the welfare benefits somewhere else. Maybe you could stop giving benefits to foreign citizens criminally trespassing in America. But no, no, no. Because Rand Paul had the audacity to talk about fiscal sanity. The mainstream media went completely insane on him. Here's Rand Paul, video clip number 5.
But it's worse than that, Neil. It's not $10.2 billion over 10 years. It's about $2 billion a year every year until 2092. There is no limit. This is the thing. This bill is completely irresponsible. You know what it says for how much money we're going to spend? Such sums as are necessary. So if John Stewart could read, maybe he'd read the bill and say, oh, my God, who in their right mind would vote for a bill that doesn't have a dollar amount in it? It has no dollar amount.
But there's no way of knowing, right? Isn't that part of the problem? Because there was no way to forecast these illnesses and sicknesses that came as a result.
We do this on disasters, too. So we just make up an enormous number. What you would do if you're responsible is you'd allocate it for 3, 4, 5 years and come back and reassess it. That's a responsible way to budget. But to have an open-ended thing that goes to 2092, really? We're going to have a spending bill that says you spend whatever you want until 2092. It doesn't matter how good the cause is. It's irresponsible. And really, people need to wake up and not be so sort of overwhelmed by celebrity that they take out-and-out falsehoods and ad hominem attacks from really a gutter snipe like John Stewart.
All right, but
poor Rand Paul. He's just hopelessly mired in the past where we have fiscal responsibility. Who in the right mind would vote for something that says we're going to spend whatever we need till 2092? Well, that would be somebody like John Stewart. Folks, we do have a budget here at InfoWars, and the way that we fund that budget, you are our budget. You are our only sponsors. We have a great sale that we have continued from last week's 34-hour broadcast, our 1776 sale. Everything is at least 10% off. Some items are 75% off because we know you've got a budget as well. So we try to help you to help us to maintain independent free media. InfoWarsStore.com. We'll be right back.
Freedom to offend. There is no free speech. It's the David Knight Show. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. You know, the people in Russia don't really know what to make of our insane virtue signaling identity politics here in the United States. There was a commentator on the news. He says, I don't really know how to explain this identity politics stuff that's going on in America. When Vladimir Putin went to have a speech at the recent G20 summit, as pointed out by a gay news organization, Gay Star News, they said he went head-to-head with Elton John over LGBT issues. And they're laughing at him because he said they've thought up 6 or 5 genders, transformers, trans something. They call them transgenders, but he called them transformers. I prefer that as a term, quite frankly. Maybe I'll start calling them transformers. He says, I don't understand what it is myself. Yeah, maybe they don't understand either. So the Russian commentators don't know what to make of it. Vladimir Putin doesn't understand what to make out of it. Calls trans people transformers. And then RT is looking at this and scratching their head and saying, look at this. We've got Apple and Google, and they've got a picture of the new emojis that have come out of on Wednesday, World Emoji Day. Apple and Google just showed us a new repertoire, the newest designs that bring even more diversity to your keyboard. It's going to get to the point where it's going to be unusable to even use emojis because they're going to be so cluttered. They've got 72 different emojis to represent gay, straight, and lesbian couples in all the different race permutations. I mean, this is truly becoming like Star Trek. All these different combination permutations. Because they got to all be holding hands, right? You can't. It's not enough to have different skin colors and all this kind of stuff, but you got to have different sexes doing this. And I look at this and it's like, well, how sexist is this? I mean, they show the women in dresses. Are you kidding me? They're in dresses and they've got long hair. And this is supposed to be lesbians. I don't understand what it is that they're showing here. But how sexist is that? I mean, the men are in trousers and the women are in dresses. With long hair, a little flipped hair. How sexist. I mean, they're going back to these, mid-20th century tropes, using this kind of stuff. Shame on Apple and Google. You got a blonde woman with a blonde man, a blonde woman with a tan-skinned man, a blonde woman with a light-skinned black man, a blonde woman with a dark-skinned black man, on and on and on. Then they've got 10 new emojis for deaf people, 10 for cane walkers, 5 ears of different shades. Fitted with hearing aids. I mean, we are so... Now there's over 3,000 registered emojis. Good luck finding something that you can use. And this is where we're going. Look, we have to pander and cater to everybody to the extent that we're going to do this kind of stuff. But really understand that it isn't even about being inclusive. It's about really being exclusive, isn't it? It's about atomizing everybody to the extent that we don't work together for our collectively work together for our individual rights. That's really what was behind the Kaepernick situation, all the Black Lives Matter stuff. If you got a situation where you think there was an abuse of police force, then get everybody together. And as I said many times, understand that it is true that a higher percentage of Black people suffer from excessive force by the use of police. But it is also true that there are more white people that get killed by excessive use of police force. So why wouldn't you bring the two of them together and say, hey, the two of us need to come together and figure out how we control this situation. Instead, you divide everybody by color. We got white versus black versus blue versus every possible color. We have an emoji civilization. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We have the Democrat debates that are going to be coming up at the end of this month, July 30th and 31st. And last night, if you stayed up late enough, you could see them do the drawing to determine how they were going to do the matchups. And so essentially, they came up with the brackets for the next debates, or maybe we ought to call them dim-bates. The candidates are, in fact, not only Democrat, but they are pretty dim. So we could call it the dim-bates, and they have picked the people who are going to be allowed to speak. And again, as I pointed out, I would like to see Mike Gravel. Well, he would be a firebrand in the that group. Nothing to lose. He's been pretty good on Twitter in terms of coming after these people in many ways, as good or better than President Trump has. So they're going to have a matchup again of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. They're going to be together on the same night again. And of course, this time, I guess they were kind of concerned. A lot of people felt like they maybe had rigged the different groupings, and so they did it publicly. As I said, I didn't watch it last night. Didn't stay up to watch that. If I was going to stay up, I would to watch something. I would have stayed up to watch the unveiling of the new Corvette. Absolutely surprised that it is only $60,000. I would have thought that it's going to be well north of $100,000, which I see as a positive indication that GM is thinking they're still going to sell cars for a little while. It looked to me like they were angling for the upper end of the market, but they, you know, have it. And again, it might as well for me. I don't have the budget to spend. I wouldn't do it even if I had the money. I wouldn't spend $60,000 on a car. But it puts it in the category of competing with some of the lower-end Porsches, being very cost-effective to them, and not putting it up in the supercar range, even though the performance is expected to be there. So I would have watched that. You know, they moved the engine to the back, and the Democrats don't even have an engine. And I don't mean an American Indian. I mean they don't have anything to propel them forward. They've got every other group. Well, they got Pocahontas, but she's not a real engine. Little White Dove. You know, that story back in her background where Little White Dove met Running Bear, and then generations later you wind up with an Elizabeth Warren. No, not really. Yeah, a lot of people have commented on this field of Democrats saying it's kind of strange because we have so many people who are senators here. And usually you have governors who are there. You know, they got a couple of mayors. They got a mayor of a teeny tiny town, Buttigieg, and Mayor Pee-wee. Looks like Pee-wee Herman, acts like Pee-wee Herman, talks like Pee-wee Herman. Maybe he is Pee-wee Herman. I don't know. Pee-wee Herman disappeared after he was last seen in a movie theater somewhere, and he disappeared. But now we got Mayor Pee-wee of a tiny town, so basically a university town, where, you know, his Marxist clientele like what he has to say. And then you've got de Blasio, who, although he is the mayor of New York City, is widely ridiculed and laughed at. There he is. Yeah, I think I got to disagree with President Trump on this one. I think he looks more like Pee-wee Herman, Buttigieg, than he does Alfred E. Newman. Alfred E. Newman has been terminated at this point, sadly. But anyway, they talked about the fact that there's not any governors really running much. You got a couple of governors, but they're not really contenders in the Democrat Party. And there might be a reason for that. NK Network points out that in a poll, the top 10 best governors are all Republicans. So, yeah, they got a governor or two that is running in this field of a couple of dozen different candidates, but they're so bad that they can't get anywhere. And the same thing is true even of the people who have an administrative spot as a mayor. They're really bad. As a matter of fact, you know, Buttigieg, the big problems that people have with him is how he's, what he's done in his city. I mean, look at the crime in his city. It's far worse than de Blasio, where everybody in his city are laughing at him. Are you serious? This guy's running for break. Give me a break. Give me a break, they said. So, you know, what are the best governors? Well, number one, according to poll, was governor of Massachusetts, Charlie Baker, then Maryland, Larry Hogan, Chris Sununu in New Hampshire, Phil Scott in Vermont, Mark Gordon in Wyoming, Doug Burgum in North Dakota, Asa Hutchinson, Arkansas, Greg Abbott in Texas. I would have thought he'd be higher than that. Bill Lee in Tennessee, Ron DeSantis in Florida. Those are the top 10 per the voters who live in their respective states, and they were all Republicans. Democrat governors that were on the most unpopular list were governors like New York's Andrew Cuomo, Oregon's Kate Brown, Rhode Island's Gina Raimondo. People don't seem to like them too much in the states where they are. That's one of the reasons why you see a lot of these Democrat candidates, even the Senate candidates, are doing really poorly in the states where they live because the people know them. They do better in other areas where the people don't know them. But it'll be interesting to see what happens in these debates. Maybe this time Marianne Williamson will be a little bit more specific about her program. Maybe she'll demonstrate to us the use of crystals or something of that effect. Before we have Richard Proctor join us to talk about judicial tyranny, he'll be joining us in the next segment. I want to go back and talk a little bit about the background of Omar. You know, she went back to Minneapolis, and everybody is showing pictures of the crowd that met her at the airport. Now, this is an the small area there in the airport. And I got to say, you know, of course, don't you, that with a camera, you can make a crowd look big or you can make it look small, depending on how you put the camera, unless it's one of President Trump's crowds where people are camping out for 40 hours before the event begins. And you got capacity plus stadiums. People are thousands of people are waiting outside to get into arenas that hold tens of thousands of people to listen to him talk for hours. And I look at this and they're making such a big deal about the people who are applauding Ilhan Omar. Maybe she's got 30 people, maybe 50 people there at the most. It's probably 30, 40 people. And they're all cheering. And it's like, seriously? Is that her staff? Is that the Democrat party operatives there in Minneapolis? Is this an AstroTurf event where she's there? You know, Mike Huckabee, talking about the comments with people, he goes, I just want to remind everybody that President Trump has a right to speak his own way, and we know that he's going to have pretty much blunt force as his style of rhetoric. But he said, there's something I want people to think about that they're not talking about, said Huckabee. He said, when he made the comments, he didn't name any one of those four congresswomen. He didn't. He just talked about those who are anti-Semitic, those who are anti-American. He lamented the fact that they're given places of prominence, and these four women then identified themselves as the guilty party. He said, we have a saying in the South, and it goes something like this. When you throw a rock across the fence, it's the hit dog that hollers. He didn't say who they were. They stood up and identified themselves. So how insane is it that they're basically admitting that they are anti-Semitic, that they are anti-American, and that their comments are really disgusting? They self-identify. They were the dogs that got hit when President Trump threw that that rock over the fence. But as I pointed out earlier in the show, I just kind of alluded to it. There are now reports from David Steinberg, who makes a lot of allegations and investigation that he did, and it was also retraced and repeated by the Minneapolis State Tribune there in the area where Ilhan Omar is. And there are some very troubling revelations about her background. Steinberg said there is probable cause to investigate Omar for 8 instances of perjury, immigration fraud, marriage fraud, up to 8 years of state and federal tax fraud, 2 years of federal student loan fraud, and even bigamy. To be clear, the facts describe perhaps the most extensive spree of illegal misconduct ever committed by a House member in American history. But we're not supposed to notice, right? And it goes even beyond her. It goes to the fact that, as they've made connections, Gateway Pundit has as well. Hofta Gateway Pundit did an investigation, a deep dive of her father. Turns out her father also committed immigration fraud. He was openly an avowed member, he was a propagandist for the Marxists in Somalia. What a surprise. And of course, he escaped there before he was executed by the people that took over the country. And you have to lie to get in the U.S. Welcome back. We're going to talk about judicial overreach because, quite frankly, I think that is the issue, the most important issue that we're facing right now. They're blocking President Trump on every policy with the border that he wants to do with judicial overreach. And they are intruding into every aspect of our personal and private lives and every aspect of state government with federal judicial overreach. And so we have joining us Richard Proctor, who is an expert, really, on the Constitution. He's written quite a bit on both economics and on the Constitution. He's been our guest many times before. I'll tell you a little bit more about Richard. Before we get into the interview, however, I want to tell you about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com because that's what funds this program. And you've been very good about sponsoring us. You are our only sponsor. And last week we had a 34-hour special, our 1776 worldwide special accompanying that. We reduced the price of many items down to $17.76, which represents at least 10% off everything in the store. Many items are up to 75% off on InfoWarsStore.com. Let me give you an example of some of the items that we have. Of course, all of our apparel, shirts, and hats are all $17.76. And then we have other items like my favorite supplement, Brain Force Plus. That is $17.76. Ultra 12, our vitamin B12 formula, methylcobalamin, same type of thing that you would get with vitamin B12 injections. You can take that in a great tasting oral formula, Ultra 12. Our Survival Shield X2 and X3 Nascent Iodine, our Knockout All Natural Sleep Aid, Silver Bullet, as well as that's our colloidal silver, as well as Super Silver, our wound dressing gel, which allows you to use nano silver as a topical and a topical dressing. Of course, nano silver is very, very effective at fighting not only bacteria but also viruses. And so you can get that Super Silver wound dressing gel, $17.76. Happy's Winter Sun, vitamin D formula. All of these are $17.76 at InfoWarsStore.com. We really do appreciate your support. Going to Dr. Richard Proctor, of course, his doctorate is in political economics. He's written extensively on economics. You'll find his website is Bathroom Economics. But, of course, he's also talked a great deal about the Constitution, about liberty. He's got a six-volume set of books, Liberty, Will It Survive in the 21st Century? A couple of great books, The Constitution, If You Can Keep It, for kids, you know, referring to the Republic, If You Can Keep It, of course, and Saving the Constitution, a detailed line-by-line explanation of the Constitution, where it came from, what it really means, looking at the original intent, looking at the literal language. You know, it's written in English. Did you know that? You don't need a group of lawyers to try to interpret it for you. And so joining us now is Richard Proctor. Thank you for joining us, Richard.
I'm glad to be here. You know, we copied Benjamin Franklin. We thought he was a pretty good dude and just changed one word.
That's right. Yeah, he said, what kind of government do you have? And he said, well, now with this Constitution, you've got a republic if you can keep it. Yep. Well, can we keep the Constitution? That's the real question. Oh, and what is the biggest problem with the Constitution right now?
Yes. Nobody knows what it says.
Yeah, that's right.
They just don't know. I'm sitting here fuming when you were talking about the overreach of the federal courts. I can't believe that we allow those people such I don't know, I can't think of a good word. I can only think of bad words. And I shouldn't say those.
Well, they're able to do that because we're ignorant.
Yes.
And you've got so many elected officials that even though they swear to uphold the Constitution, they don't have any idea what's in it. And they are gaslighted in many cases by lawyers who tell them otherwise. You know, you've got all these attorney generals in every one of these states. Yeah. You've got the Department of Justice at the federal level, and they're telling everybody what they can and cannot do. And so we're all bowing down to the rule of these lawyers.
Yeah, and the Constitution is very clear. In Article 3, it's very, very clear what the federal judicial, is supposed to be involved in. Not just the Supreme Court, but all federal judges. Now, did you mention last time I was on there 3,500 federal judges?
Yeah. That's the best estimate. It's pretty hard to get a total on that. It's kind of like a number of pages of IRS regulations.
Yes,
nobody can really give an exact number.
Think about the idea here. We have limited the representative to 435. They should be the power in the government, and we've let the federal judges up to 3,000.
That's a great
balance
point.
In that?
That's a great point. It's exactly the opposite of what it ought to be. Because yes. The first time you came on, I think it was that we were talking about that, how they'd worked a very long time to make sure you're going to have a representative for every 30,000 people. And then immediately they ignored that and said, for every 60,000 people. And,
yep.
And exactly. Then they capped the number of representatives as the population grew. And so now we got, what is it, Richard, three quarters of a million people on average represented by?
That's right, 700,000. 700,000. Oh,
yeah.
Washington's turning over in his grave. 700,000.
But we got a lot of judges that we didn't elect.
Oh, yeah, we have a lot of that, too. Oh, my.
Well, that's a great point. We should have at least 3,500 congressmen. Instead, we got 3,500 judges who aren't accountable to anybody, not elected by anybody. You can't get rid of these guys. And they just write the law themselves. I mean, who needs elected representatives, right?
Yeah, right. You know, the Constitution does not say that these judges are in for life. We've just assumed it because of the wording the way it is. But it's nebulous. It doesn't say that. We've assumed it. It says good behavior. That's what it says. We can't even decide what good behavior is.
Yeah, that's the whole problem, is that they have assumed power.
Yeah.
And we have assumed that they know what they're talking about, and we've assumed that we're going to, you know, let them lead us and rule over us.
It's absolutely, you know, and our buddy John James Marshall isn't a great dude. That's, those attorneys think he's the finest thing since sliced bread, but he just wanted more power. And not only did he take the power away from the federal government in 1803, he then went ahead and took it away from all the state governments in 1816. I mean,
yeah.
He has no rights to go into the state.
Talk a little bit about Marbury versus Madison.
Oh, yes. That particular gizmo, he's sitting back here in his office. I'm just fantasizing here. But he's sitting back here in his office and says, you know, that Constitution, that binds me down too much. I can't stand that. I've got to be able to get something done. What can I do? Oh, well, I can use judicial review. Now, I know that it's not for contracts. I know that it's just out there for judges to review the law and see what's going on. But let's change it just a little bit. So then he gets in his decision and he writes, anything that's against the Constitution is null and void. And he's absolutely right. Then he says, using judicial review, we will decide whether or not it's constitutional. Well, that by itself is unconstitutional because he doesn't have that right to make that decision.
Yeah.
It's just terrible. And then, you know, everybody's followed him, just bowed to him. Jefferson wrote back in 1824 or 21, something in that neighborhood. I've got the letter. He wrote, hey, the Supreme Court is supposed to be regulated by the people. Now, if you really look at it closely, the Supreme Court's supposed to be regulated by the states because it's the states that select the senators, and it's the senators who approve the Supreme Court electors. So the states have been negligent in not getting their proper people there, but of course they can't because somebody decided they were going to ignore Article 5, the last sentence of Article 5. They thought they were going to ignore all the sentences in Article 1 about the Senate.
Good point. We're going to be right back. We can take a quick break. We'll be right back with Richard Proctor. Stay with us.
Free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're talking to Richard Proctor. We've been talking about judicial overreach. How did we get here? Well, we just assumed that the lawyers know what they're talking about. We just assumed that the judges have power, and they are the ones who assumed power, right? And we talked about how Judge Marshall in Marbury versus Madison assumed that power, as Richard Proctor said, well, you have to abide by the Constitution, and then he does something which is unconstitutional. You know, Richard, it reminds me of Roe v. Wade. When we go back and we look at that, same thing is said by Harry Blackmun. He says, well, you know, as judges, we must not write law. We must go back and we must look at the Constitution. And yet what they did was they wrote law. They had absolutely no authority to make any decision about that. But when they went back and made that decision, Richard, they went back and looked at Greek philosophy. They looked at European laws about abortion. They looked at what the AMA said about how to determine, you know, viability and so forth. And then they cut the baby in thirds.
Yes, that's one of the areas that really aggravates me because they just listened to whatever the thread of the country was at the moment.
So yes, exactly.
Not everybody, just some people that are outspoken.
Yeah, you know, they're legislating from the bench, the same thing they did when they defined marriage more recently.
I mean,
even in California, the referendum didn't carry there. Even with all the money put in by Tim Cook at Apple and other corporations out there in California, even in liberal California, they didn't want to change the definition of marriage. You had marriage defined, for example, in places like Alabama. It was defined in the Constitution as well as in law. And the federal courts came in and said, no, we're going to define the Supreme Court said, we're going to define marriage.
You know, Alex, not Alex, you're not Alex, you're David. You know, we've got to think about something here. Every time the Supreme Court oversteps its bounds, the states are sovereign entities. They are sovereign. They can decide what happens in their state. So if they just had a backbone, they could nullify this stuff and carry on properly.
That's right. They're being bribed, of course, by the federal government because, you know, everybody in the federal government wants to pretend that whenever, you know, and that's again what we hear about Roe v. Wade. It is the law of the land. No, it isn't. It's a Supreme Court decision. They don't write law, right?
Right. And in fact, I think all the laws of the land and the federal government at the time were about outlawing abortion, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's right.
And yet, you know, when we look at something, everybody goes, you know, these landmark decisions like Marbury versus Madison or Roe v. Wade, don't you dare challenge the Supreme Court. And yet, how many times has the Supreme Court reversed itself? They did it within 1 year under Andrew Jackson. That's when he said, well, they've made their opinion. Let's see them enforce it, right?
Yep, that's right. And more presidents should say that. Trump should have said that over and over and over again in his first year, 17. He should have just said that, hey, guys, you made your decision, now you enforce it. We're going to do what's right.
But he's listening to Barr, his attorney general. And, of course, the attorney general, Barr, is going to take the side that you have judicial supremacy because that gives the lawyers supremacy.
Yeah.
And because, you know, the way they're going to come after President Trump is going to be with lawsuits and things like that. And he's hoping that Barr is going to have his back on that. So, you know, he's going to let, you know, this and this is how this continues to perpetuate, isn't it?
You know, listening to attorneys, when you've got the Constitution right in front of you, it's kind of like asking the wolves, what are we going to have for dinner again?
I mean,
it's just, you're asking the wolves how to guard the hen house. You're asking them, and it's just on and on and on. It's stupid. The Constitution is easy to read. All you got to do is pick it up and read it. Now, I know that there's some language in there that's tough to read. I know that. That's why I wrote the book I wrote. But I tried to make everything simple so that people could easily see what's going on and what's happening and things that are hidden. I mean, most people don't know that the militia is supposed to be organized in every state and funded by Congress. I'll be darned. They don't even know that.
Yeah. Supposed to hand out assault rifles to these people.
Yes, they are. Absolutely. They're supposed to give them what
the left would freak out, wouldn't it?
Yes, they would, because they take them away from them. No. The Constitution says give it to them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it worked out pretty well for the Swiss.
Pardon?
It worked out pretty well for the Swiss people, didn't it?
Oh, yes.
When their government handed out assault weapons to them, fully automatic weapons, and taught them how to use it. That's really, if people want to know what this is going to look like, we have an example of that in modern history, if you look at the Swiss nation.
Yes, they've done well. And if you want an example of the other side, look at what happens to every country that loses their protection, their guns. Every country goes downhill. I got to apologize, David. I get so carried away on some of these subjects. People will ask me a question, I'll say, don't ask me a question if you haven't got 4 hours. I mean, I get so carried away. I give presentations, an hour and a half presentation, and they ask me questions. I have a tough time keeping to the hour and a half.
Well, you know, we understand what the letter of the law is. We've looked at this. A lot of people don't, and that's why it's important to have this conversation, because there has to be a ground support of people who are going to support when a state politician comes back and stands up and says, you don't have any authority to do that, because all of the forces of the political establishment are then going to be focused on that one individual who challenges the conventional wisdom, the accepted order. They're going to withdraw federal funds from those people. They may try to remove them from office. They may try to arrest those people. They need to have a ground support, a groundswell of support standing behind them, because anybody who has the courage to stand up to the lies and the gaslighting of the federal government, of the public and everybody else, is going to become the tip of the spear, and they're going to come after that individual.
Yep, exactly so. And the worst offender of all the things, well, I don't know about the worst. All four of the offenders are really bad. But the Supreme Court, oh my, they've done a dastardly thing to us. And we sit back and, you know, in Article 3, but the Congress is in charge of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court can't do anything that the Congress says you can't do. It's there. It's right there in the document. But the Congress, they don't pay any attention. They just say, oh yeah, we better do it, because they're all attorneys also.
Yes,
it's supposed to be an attorney field.
Yeah. I think one of the things that continually amazes me is, I said, you know, there's certain Supreme Court decisions that are sacrosanct, and you know, you're supposed to pretend that has not only become the law of the land, but it has amended the Constitution, like Marbury versus Madison, like Roe v. Wade. And yet they ignore these egregious decisions, like the Dred Scott decision that said you got to return the slaves to their masters if they escape that state.
Yeah,
or they ignore the fact that the Supreme Court under Woodrow Wilson sent a film producer to jail and a massive fine. They sentenced him 10 years in jail, a massive fine, because he didn't censor his movie about the Revolution of 1776. He portrayed the British as the bad guys. Woodrow Wilson wanted us to get involved in World War I on the side of the British, so he told him to censor that. He didn't. They sent him to jail, gave him a massive fine. And for 50 years, the Supreme Court said there is no First Amendment protection for movies. I like to use that because we have so many people on the left, you know, who want unbridled freedom for films and so forth, to say anything that they want. And I like to use that to show them how the Supreme Court has gone the other way.
Yeah.
When it didn't have a right to do that. It was wrong.
And it's astounding that we have so many examples that we can do. It's astounding. I mean, one or two examples would be interesting, but hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. I mean, I wrote in my fourth volume, I wrote a whole, almost 100 pages about the Supreme Court violation. 55 of their decisions are discussed.
I mean,
it's terrible.
Give us a couple of examples, because I've got one that relates to just this last month. But give us a couple of, about a minute left. Give us one example.
Here's a good example. In 1968, the Supreme Court decided the media could lie all they wanted as long as it wasn't malicious.
That's how we got CNN, right?
Yep, that's how we got it.
Except their lies are malicious.
That was the beginning of fake news. Absolutely right. And then another example is in 96 when New York didn't want to store nuclear weapons or atomic, not weapons, but byproducts. Way the federal government
nuclear waste.
To do it. Yeah, nuclear waste. And then the Supreme Court said, well, if you take any money from, this is exactly what their decision says, if you take any incentive money from the federal government, you must therefore do what they say to do. And there they cut the 10th Amendment out completely. I mean, there they said, if you take money, you have no rights.
Yeah, that's the ultimate weapon that they hold over everybody's head. And that's one of the reasons why nobody is talking about the debts and the deficits here, because, they can just print as much of that stuff as they want. We'll be right back with Richard Proctor. Stay with us. One more second.
Working starts to make me wonder where fruits of what I do are going. He says in love and war all is fair, but he's got cards he ain't showing.
Welcome back. We're talking to Richard Proctor, and again, you can find his many books that he's written at bathroomeconomics.com. I want to talk to Richard, I want to talk to you about the deficit, because that is now no longer be a concern of anybody running for president, and we need to be concerned about that. We'll talk about that in just a minute, but I've got one more thing I want to talk about in terms of the courts, Supreme Court especially. You know, Richard, I think it was June 26th and June 28th, we had two decisions. It was Justice Roberts and the other four liberal justices that chimed in and contradicted themselves completely 2 days apart. Because on the 26th, the five liberals came in and said, and there were all these articles saying, well, the conservatives thought they had a slam dunk on this now. They thought they had a conservative majority, and they thought that there was going to be some check on the administrative state, that they were going to ask them to give reasons for why they write new laws, and that's what they're doing. They're writing our laws instead of Congress. And they came up with a decision on the 26th and said, no, we are not going to second guess the bureaucracy, essentially. And then 2 days later, they came back and said, well, the Commerce Department has to give us reasons for everything that they do. So within 2 days, they say that the administrative state, which is, under the presidency, they don't have to do anything at all. They don't have to give us any examples of it. But he's got to define for us all the reasons for why he wrote this law, or we're not going to approve it within just 2 days. So when they contradict themselves that broadly with just a two-day span like that, how do you undo that? What is the constitutional mechanism for putting these people in check?
Isn't that terrible that they sit out there without anybody checking them? Really, nobody is checking them. The Senate, which should check them, has been taken away from the state, so they can no longer check them. There's no check. Everybody has a boss. The people in the states are supposed to be the bosses, and we've been taken away. You can't influence a representative when there are 700,000 people that he's supposed to represent. You can't influence him. No one person can do it. But if it was 30,000 and they had their offices in their districts, we could influence them. That's why it isn't that. That's why they changed it. There is no superior place than the Supreme Court in our estimation in today's life, and that's absolutely wrong.
It's absolutely not in the Constitution that they created some kind of a pyramid structure with a Supreme Court at the top. But that's what everybody's effectively doing. They had different spheres of power. They had the Supreme Court over here. They had the presidency. They had the Congress. And they were all separate, independent branches of government. And then you had independence with the state governments, with the people and so forth as an additional check on all that. But, of course, no president, no governor, no Congress, no state legislature is acting to check whatever the judiciary does.
Yeah, and the states could. The states have nullification. Montana's done it. Several people have done it. Several states have done it. They could they could do it if they would.
Well, take a look at marijuana, for example, right?
Yeah.
We've had state legislatures, and we've had the people with referenda nullify that aspect of the war on drugs. And the war on drugs began in 1960, not in 1971 with Richard Nixon and his declaration of that, but in 1961, the UN created those four schedules and put all the drugs in those four schedules and put marijuana in as a Schedule One, saying that it had no medical use. And yet you've got more than two-thirds of the states giving it a medical exemption. That is clearly nullification, and they did it peacefully. And that is the process for how we ought to pull all this, the example for how we ought to pull this back, isn't it?
That is the example. I have a system to get our sovereignty back in the states. I'm not looking at the federal government. I'm looking at the states. I have a system that I'm presenting to people about how a five-step program, how we can get our autonomy, our sovereignty back again. And people are liking it, but I can't talk to enough.
Wow, that's great. Yeah, we'll have to get you on to talk about that next time. Let's talk, though, today, because I thought it was an interesting article. We've seen several different news outlets talk about the fact that nobody is talking about the deficit. President Trump has completely ignored the fact that now we're going to be adding $1 trillion worth of debt just this year. All of the Democrats are out there saying, well, yeah, I've got this $40 trillion plan. I've got a $60 trillion plan for this welfare program. Nobody is the least bit interested. We got this new thing called modern monetary theory, which is really just magic money. Talk a little bit about this, since you're also interested in economics, the danger of this attitude.
Oh, my. You know, debt is the most vicious thing we've got in our society. There are those now who are teaching that if we didn't have debt, we wouldn't have money. And that's a pack of lies. I don't care how fancy the guys look and how eloquent they are. If when somebody says debt is money, and if you don't have debt, you don't have money, they're lying to you.
Mm-hmm.
And debt is, we've been taught this, that everything is debt. When people get something, immediately they're going to spend it. Whenever anybody wins something, they want to spend it. And if they don't have any money, put it on a credit card. You can afford that. You can afford an easy $10 payment. Put it on a credit card. And we are now immersed. $17 trillion of consumer debt is reported that I've been watching. $17 trillion. I mean,
yeah, of course, for decades we had the IRS that would reward you with some tax deductions for interest going into debt. They would punish you if you saved money. Now they're removing the reward for borrowing money. They just punish you everywhere.
Yeah, that's right. Nobody's congratulating us on anything. You know, it's a pleasure talking to you, Dave. You guys have an understanding of the Constitution and what's going on, and I like to talk to you guys.
Well, we'd like to have you on to talk about this, but especially about economics. I mean, you know, Keynesian economics is always telling people, as you said, you know, look, we have to have debt. It's not a problem. And I remember when I went to college, they would say, well, you know, you have microeconomics. Now, that's your own checkbook. If you go into debt there, that could be bad.
Yes.
But if we're really big, you know, if it's the country here, then debt is not an issue. And I was like, oh, are you serious? I mean, that's like saying that, you know, it's going to hurt if you drop this paperweight on your foot. But if you got a 1,000-pound anvil and you drop it on yourself, that's not a problem. It's not even going to fall, right? It's going to just suspend in air.
Well, I've got a chart in my volumes. I've got a chart on the debt since 1790, the debt, every year, the debt, and the increase or decrease. And up until 1958, there were some years that we actually reduced the deficit, and some years that we didn't, but it was still going. 58, that's the last year anybody stayed within the budget. Every year since then, it's just been growing bigger and bigger. I don't mean the debt itself. I mean how much they go in deficit, how much they spend that they don't have. Every year since 58, They have never not added to the debt.
I thought that they got a little bit of a positive response there in the 90s when they
I'm sorry, Dave. That was fictitious. What they really did was they just didn't do as much deficit as had done before.
Okay.
That's what really happened. It was just a play of words.
I gotcha. Yeah, they're gaslighting us on that as well. Yeah, and so, you know, as you point out, the deficit is the annual shortfall. And then as you have those annual shortfalls, the debt is the accumulation of all those annual shortfalls.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right. And we've never had an annual non-shortfall since 58.
Wow.
Never.
Wow, that's amazing.
Never
won. And now we're putting it on at the rate of $1 trillion a year, and nobody cares about it.
And that's right. Nobody knows what's $1 trillion. You know, we have no idea what $1 trillion is. I don't know. If you take $1 bills and stack them on, I don't know how high the list would be. I mean, these people just don't know. They don't understand that debt is horrible, and this debt we've got could destroy our country completely. I mean, it could.
Well, and here's the deal, is that as we use this and we now get into this kind of a downward spiral where we think, well, you know, hey, there doesn't have to be any accountability, and we don't even have to pretend that there's any accountability. That was a thing that created the crisis, so they had to pull it out with Bretton Woods and then with the petrodollar and so forth, because people said, well, we'll go with the American dollar because it's backed with gold. Once they realized that they were printing money without any sort of control at all, then the rest of the country said, wait a minute, we're not going to go for this Ponzi scheme, and they called them on that. So the real danger is that if we continue down this road, that these other countries are going to abandon this, go to some other kind of currency, or to go to some kind of a worldwide cryptocurrency or something like that, and then we will be in the situation of these third world countries who have hyperinflation, right?
Yes, we will. In fact, the way they've done that, we are the reserve currency. It happened in the Bretton Woods conference after World War II. We are the reserve currency, the trading currency of the world. The only reason we've been able to survive what we've been able to do is because the other countries dealt with us and they used our dollar, but they are moving away from it. And if we don't keep the reserve currency status, which it appears we will not, if we don't keep that status, our dollar could die the same day.
It's an immense power that we have, and we are abusing that power when we say that the cumulative debt doesn't matter whatsoever. And we abuse that enough.
Yes,
and you've already got the different countries that want to oppose us power-wise, like China and Russia and Iran, others that are trying to move to another currency. But if we continue to abuse that, they're going to make sure they come up with a different structure. Thank you so much for joining us. Richard Proctor, BathroomEconomics.com. That's our program for today. Thank you.